You guys participated. I even saw questions coming in just before we sat down to eat. So I'm going to try to do my best to address all the questions, but I apologize if your question does not get addressed. I do believe that there are going to be like overwhelming or overarching topics that hopefully touch your question and minister to you tonight. So without further ado, I would like to ask each couple to do a brief intro of who you are. Maybe describe who your family is, your children. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to, before I give mine, I'm going to encourage everyone to be brief tonight because we want to cover as many topics as possible. Don't be afraid to share, but do just be brief. So I will start by saying I'm Will, it's my wife Beverly, and we've been married for 22 years. And we have four children. One is 20, the other one is 14, and then 11 and 9. And we are also adopting two children, one 9 and one 7, so they're not with us yet. So we'll have 6 soon. So we're going to have a baby soon. So, not the normal kind. So anyway, I'm messing this up. So did you want to do this?
Nope, you're good.
This is good. This is genuine.
All you guys.
Yeah, this is the pastor telling everyone else to keep it short, right? Only run one preacher up here, so.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Eric. This is my wife, Leah. We've been married for 5 years. We have two children, two girls. Hannah is 2.5, just a little over, and Adeline is 10 months? Somewhere around there. The second one is like, you kind of figured it out already, so you're like, whatever.
Hello, this is Ken Steffi, and this is my wife, Lori, and she'll tell you the kids' ages because I don't know them very well.
He knows ages, maybe not birth dates, but yeah. So we've been married 27, 8? Yeah. Got married in 91. Somebody else who knew the math. Anyways, kids are, we have three children. We have our oldest daughter is 22, our son is 20, and then our youngest daughter is 13. So we're covering a little bit of a span there, like Will and Bev. So that's us.
Well, as you can tell, there's some really great diversity on the stage. Really excited about this panel. And we did have one more couple that had some even older kids than most of the folks on stage. So, we're excited to have even younger parents. Each one of these lives, like Pastor Will said, they're not perfect parents. But I think for us that know these parents, we see the fruit that has come from them following the Lord and the way that they've raised their children. So I'm going to get right into it. Define what a parent should be. When we think about, just the core definition of a parent. They're like, that wasn't...
See, yeah.
Maybe for you... even from a vision standpoint, what's your vision been for your family? What's your goal?
I have an answer from a book I read. He said, you are raising children to be functioning, kind, God-fearing adults. So that's basic. In a nutshell, I think our goal for us, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say... For me, one of the things that I think is real important is we dedicate our children to the Lord when they're very young. And at that point, they become His, and I really believe that. They're His kids. We're here to guide them through, to try to help them where we can help them, give them guidance and support them along their journey.
Growing up, I grew up without a dad really involved in my life, and so kind of piggybacking what Ken said about we're here, they're God's kids, but the big part of kind of summing up what they said is just being there for them, involved in the life through dedication, through raising them to be God-fearing adults. But for me, a lot of it is just I'm still learning exactly what it means, but just being there is a big aspect of it.
Well, touching on guiding them, we're going to jump right into the hard stuff. So this one's a little personal. It's in the area of discipline. Our 3-year-old son is tough, hides things, lies to get out of trouble, and does what he wants regardless of the consequences. How do we know what disciplinary actions are working or not when he continues to disobey in secret if he knows he'll get in trouble? And we have some questions that also get to this level that kind of can back this up as well. You know, when parents get to, you know, that wit's end, when their discipline, you know, might not seem to be working. So how would you guys address that?
Well, first of all, something that we've talked about is taking it back to God and praying over it, praying for the heart of your child, that God will mold and shape your child. Because while, like, we are responsible for our children, God's given them to us to raise. He's the one who knows them better than we do to begin with. So, you know, considering first in prayer, pray over their hearts, pray that God will change their hearts and save them, because they do need to be saved just like we need to be saved. And then when looking at the discipline, something we've talked about is sometimes you have to try different things in discipline. So some things work for one child, maybe that don't work for another child necessarily. And we're still figuring it out too, because Hannah's only 2.5. So we don't have lots of experience yet, but I'm even starting to see her change now. But specifically because we've been really consistent with her. So we show more consistency and we try to do everything from a place of love and gentleness with her, and we talk with her about what she's done wrong, and we're just constantly trying to bring it back to why she is in trouble, if that makes sense, like why we're disciplining her, but that we still love her. So, you know, we're obviously not dealing with an older child yet, so we don't know what the later years will look like in that, but we can tell that at least being consistent has helped. And praying over her heart every single night, we pray with her as well, so that she's, you know, we're praying for her to grow up to be obedient, to love God, and to serve God. So that's just one of the things that we talked about.
Yeah, just one sort of brief thing to add, as is excellent. But for us in our household, I made clear very early that the harshest punishment that we'll receive was be for lying. You know, if you do something wrong, that's fine. Tell us and you'll be okay. If we find out about it, you lied to us about it, that's a whole nother level. And that put the emphasis on being truthful for us with the kids early on. And that, I think that helped.
Yeah, I can't echo enough, I think, the need for consistency. God makes his boundaries very clear to us as his children. And so yeah, I think most parents struggle, when we've struggled, is when we've not given our kids clear boundaries and we haven't been consistent with what the consequences for crossing those boundaries were. And the times when we've been very consistent, and it takes a little bit of stubbornness. You have to be more stubborn than your child. And that's true. You have to stick with it, because what happens is they wear you down, especially if you know, it's been a long day or it's been a long fight in that area. They wear you down, and what's the easiest thing to do? It's to let it slide. I mean, and so it's, parenting is not an easy task. It's hard work. And therefore, you have to make sure you go, no, this is the boundary we set. So now we got to go have this conversation again. But I think that consistency is super important.
I just have one more thing to add. If that question, well, it doesn't matter if it was from the mom or the dad, but I think times when we've had difficulties with our kids, we did have one that would hide things from us and try to sneak around, and we had to come to agreement on how we were going to handle it. And when we were seeing the issues get worse was because I was tired and I was frustrated and I was angry and I didn't back my husband up with what he had said. And I think it's important that the two of you talk together, and maybe he's seeing something or she's seeing something that maybe one of you is seeing something different. You know, I remember him telling me, why do you let them order you around? And I said, what do you mean by that? And he's like, well, they just said, I'm thirsty. And you said, oh, I'll get you some water. I didn't even realize that they were bossing me around. And I was just, okay, they need water, you know, or whatever. And so we had to come up with phrases that we would use, such as, how can you say that nicer? or how about you ask me instead of tell me, things like that. You know, we came up with little phrases that we both said that would reinforce the consistency issue so that it was being said by both of us every time, for the most part.
That's one of the things that Eric and I do right now with Hannah, because Hannah's very bossy and she's very strong-willed and stubborn. So we constantly have to remind her to ask. We say, how do you ask? And she always has to say please every single time, and she always has to say thank you every single time. And we have to remind her 1,000 times a day, because she still doesn't always say it. But like little bits and pieces, like one time a day, maybe she'll say, please, can I have this? And then she'll say thank you all by herself. And it's like just this little glimpse of, oh, okay, she's getting it, just a little bit at a time. But that's one thing with her, is we're learning, because we haven't learned, but we're learning that consistency is one of the most important things with her. Because even if we give her 3 chances and then we discipline her, sometimes she's pushing the boundaries as much as she possibly can every single time. So we came to a decision that we give her 1 warning, and then after that we discipline her. And we tell her, if you disobey, you're going to, we spank. So we say, well, you'll get a spanking. And so she knows she doesn't want to get a spanking, so that tends to correct her behavior before we have to get to the discipline part. But we have to follow through. So if she disobeys after that warning, we're consistently trying to discipline her right then, so that she understands if I disobey, there is a consequence. So she's starting to understand that she has to obey sooner than later. But before we came to that agreement, sometimes she'd disobey a few times before we came to the discipline part, and by that point we're just frustrated and exhausted, and so we were getting angry. And if we were punishing angry, then she's upset, we're upset, and that's not how we want our discipline to be. Like, that's not biblical, that's not a good example of Christ, because Christ is not angry when he disciplines us. So we're trying to be consistent in disciplining sooner, before we've reached the point of exhaustion and frustration. So when that happens, she doesn't fall apart and cry anymore. She's coming to us and saying, sorry, I love you, and hugging us, and then it's resolved a lot sooner, because we haven't reached the point of we're all falling apart and we're all angry and frustrated.
I just want to address the question really specifically. It was about, you know, just hiding things or telling lies,
yeah,
right?
There's a practical part of this question that this person wants to also get some insight into. How do they address this?
This is from advice Ken has given me on different things that applies to this, is that if you can pull one thing out where this child tells the truth, even if you have to just try really hard to find that one thing, just make sure you're so positive and praise them about, you know, thank you for telling me the truth. And you're going to have to look. I know with certain things we've dealt with, I'm like, no, I can't think of one good thing they've done today. Nope. you're going to be looking. You're going to be watching every moment, but find that one opportunity that you can say, you know, thank you for bringing that. Thank you for telling me the truth.
So. That's really good. Yeah, because obviously the cry in this question is, I'm kind of over this kid. So how do I find that one glimpse? And that's great.
And I do have one more thing to say is, Ken and I have been at a variety of different Calvaries as we've moved different places. And he probably knows what I'm talking about. There was this kid at one of our churches that we were both like, oh my gosh, when that kid grows up, you're just going to have to hide him on an island where no one will, and the parents pulled their hair out. I mean, there was like 5, they had like a bunch of kids, 5 of them were these perfect angels, and this one, same parent, same everything. You're like, well, what's with this one kid? What is up with this? And as we were there and watched him get older, he turned out totally fine, just had to go through those. So as you're praying for your child, like Leah said, just know that the Lord is faithful. You know, and those prayers will always be answered, and they will never come back void. So even as you're pulling your hair out, know that the Lord's hearing those prayers, saving those prayers, and he will remain faithful. It might take a few more years than you'd like it to. In the meantime, just get a wig. Okay.
Well, you know, we've talked about a couple of methods already of discipline. Why don't we just go ahead and talk about ways that you have discipline? So what are ways that you've disciplined? And then I think I would segue it to also, have you as couples disagreed on any of those methods, and how have you overcome that?
Beverly's been wrong a few times. So we disagreed a few times. Beverly's definitely the more of the let's maybe give him a little bit more grace and a little bit more opportunity, and I'm definitely the hardliner. So we balance each other out well in the sense that she encourages me to think through ways that I can minister to my kids and not just discipline them, and then I think I help her to be more consistent. So with our discipline, you know, handling the challenges have been to try to realize that she's not my opposition, she's my helper, and vice versa, that I'm here to be the extra set of eyes, the extra heart, you know, the extra thought process, just like she is for me, and to take that to heart. Like, we had a challenge with one of our teenagers once, and I was done, and it wasn't even, the behavior wasn't that horrible, it was just consistently bad decision making, and I was done, and I, you know, she's like, go talk to them, and I was like, I don't want to, and I don't even know what the thought process they're having is. And she reminded me, she's like, Will, she's like, you're the parent, like, you're the one that God put in this child's life to pour into them. And it really challenged me because I was not in that place, and I needed that. So, you know, I definitely was very, I was stuck in the say, I'm not going to go talk to them, or I'm not going to do this. But, you know, she provided that extra perspective for me. So realizing that she's my teammate, she's my helper in this, and vice versa, I think is the way that we've tried to approach disagreements on how to handle a situation, because we do have different perspectives.
I'll be very tactical. So when we, small children, I tried to discipline a little more consistently and heavily, and we did spank when they were young, and we never did it in anger. So it often would be because we can get angry. It was often go to your room, and we're just going to calm down for a few minutes, and then we're going to talk about your behavior. It's not you. This is your behavior that was a problem, because I still love you. And then we would do that. And then as they get older, we had to transition to taking away things from them. And one of the things that Lori's been very, very good at, and remind me sometimes because I can be a little more firm, is that she didn't want to take away things like church activities. And that was one of the things that we had to work through early on, is, you know, especially like even friends' outings, you know, areas where they can be around other, you know, young Christian family kids or good influences or things like that. Not to use that as a punishment or church as a punishment, but find other ways of punishing them, taking away things as they get older.
From a discipline perspective, we spanked them when they were younger, because the Bible, you know, does address that topic. So we did do that when they were younger. But I think each one was a little different, but we transitioned fairly quickly to being able to have more conversations with them and to be able to talk it through. And then, you know, as our kids got older, we transitioned from less discipline to more influence. And because when you hit a certain point, you can only control so many things. So, you know, like particularly, like they're driving, you know, if they're out with their friends who are driving, you know, I can't control all their actions and behavior when they're out and about. I'm literally out of control at that moment. So at some point, I have to try to transition from always taking things away, or you know, grounding or things like that. I had to come to a place where I had to try to influence them. Doesn't mean we didn't have boundaries, and it doesn't mean there weren't consequences for those boundaries. I think one of our kids lost video game privileges an entire summer once as a teenager. So, and I won't mention which one of them is in this room that happened to. He's not sitting at the table right over there. You know, so it's not that didn't, but you do have to try to transition at some point to try to help them make better decisions and not just lower the hammer every time they cross a boundary. Because at some point they'll be able to look at you and go, I really don't care. And if you have no influence and all you've wielded is authority at that point, I think it becomes very difficult for you to have any impact upon their lives.
Something I've tried to do since they were really, really tiny babies, before they could even talk to me, as I would talk to them, you know, when they're little tiny little babies, how are you? You're good. Oh, are you talking to me? And just conversation, constant conversation. So I'm always talking to the kids. And I don't know if you've heard this said, and I'm going to mess it up, but, you know, basically listen to them when they're little and they're telling you little things that seem little to you, so that when they're older, they'll tell you big things, because their whole life, it's all been big things. And so I've tried to really have open conversations with the kids from the time they were tiny. So that way, you know, we believe in not just disciplining behavior, but addressing the issues in the heart. Well, why are they behaving this way? There's always a reason. A behavior is a symptom of a deeper issue. So it's not just don't hit. You know, it's okay. Let's step back here from the situation. They're hitting. Why are they hitting? Are they angry about something? Did somebody hurt their feelings? Did someone take something that they felt belonged to them? Find out. Go a little deeper. You know, and when you do that, and then they learn, okay, my parents love me. They're not just trying to tell me no all the time. You know, things like that. There was something else I was going to say. It was important, but I'm sure it'll come up again later. Oh, this. I'm not a huge fan of timeout, and I'll tell you why. Because it isolates them. It sends them away. It tells them, we can't handle you right now. You're going to go in your room, and you can come out. And I've done it. I've done it before. You can come out when you're ready to join the family. You know, kind of like, it's up to you, kiddo. But something that I really try to do is bring them near. So if they are doing something and it is just, oh, it's irritating, or they're just wrong and they're misbehaving, and I'm like, okay, you know what? This child needs some extra love from me right now. And I'm going to bring them close, and we're going to sit together. And maybe they're angry and they don't want to talk to me. I'm like, you know what? That is okay. I love you. I know you're angry at me, and that is okay. I'm going to love you. If you're going to be angry at me, that's okay. I will love you from till the day you die, till the day I die. You know, we talk, you know, we're constantly having talk. So my kids, I think all of them, even my 20-year-old, will come to my room to sit and talk to me, you know, because it's always been conversation. So that's part of my discipline, I guess.
I was more likely to give myself a timeout than the kids a timeout. Like, yep. Mommy needs a timeout. Yeah. I'm going in my room. I'm shutting the door. I'll come talk to you when I calm down. So, you know, yeah. But speaking of forgetting, I did have something that made sense a moment ago when you were talking. I was like, oh, that's a really good point. Shoot. Something Ken and I had talked about, which was briefly before tonight. We had about 5 minutes to be like, oh, yeah, tonight, right. Something that we had heard before we even had kids, and it's something maybe all of you had heard, but it helped us so much with our parenting, was a concept called parenting inside the funnel. But the funnel is upside down. And as your kids are very little, the funnel is very small, and you're kind of keeping them in control. You're really watching. You're watching, you know, disciplining, and just really, in some ways, you feel like you're a little micromanaging. But then if you do that when they're little, as they get older and that funnel gets bigger, then you can give more and more freedom, and you find you're disciplining less. And we found that was very true as we look back. You know, our kids were able to get more and more freedom. And we had some other families that we had kind of watched do it the opposite way, where their kids had a lot of freedom, and then they tried to rein them in as they got older, and that was not as effective. So it's just a mental picture that helped us. You know, as you're parenting, which way is your funnel? You know, at what age are your kids? Which is not what I was going to say at all, but maybe it'll come back.
Yeah, I'll just follow up. It's to that point too. It's a lot easier to give freedoms as they get older and they earn your respect, and you can see their maturity as they're growing up from little and they become more mature, than it is to try to rein it in earlier. Then you're fighting them. Yeah. So, yeah.
Awesome. Can everybody hear us okay? Good. All the way in the back? All right. Good. So the next one, you know, again, we had very personal, a group of questions that, you know, really seemed to hit down to the core of being just, you know, drained mentally, physically, spent from either work or just a day at home, battling the kids, household things, you know, marriage issues and challenges, just being spent, and really, you know, how do we find, and how have you guys found the balance between housework, kids, life, and your marriage? What has been the key to the success for you?
anybody have any suggestions? So one thing that's actually come recently that we've really had to do is, and it seems simple, but it's a lot harder to put into practice when you're actually living life, is just absolute communication about everything that goes on, in a, to where you're organizing and managing your time, you're both working, or you have things going on, and there's not sacrificing the time spent together and realizing that sometimes, like, this still comes first. And a lot of times as parents, I think we tend to put our kids first before our marriage, and realizing that this, if this is not a team and this is not united, then all those other things are going to kind of fall through the cracks. So while it's not as often as it used to be before kids, we still make sure that we have a date night planned, you know, and spend time together, not necessarily always talking about the kids, if we can try, although it is difficult. But there's just that open communication and realizing you're in it together and not basing your marriage off of a performance thing. Well, I did the dishes, so why doesn't she do the laundry? But just sacrificing, especially as men and as husbands, and realizing there's no stipulation on serving your wife. It's, you're supposed to do it. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what we're called to do. And so regardless of how tired I may be, there's, when I get home, I'm still walking into the room as the father, as the representative of Christ in the home, and the servant for my wife, maybe after a little nap, but eventually we'll get there. But I think that it's just important of just communicating effectively and not basing it off of just performance, because I mean, admittedly, that used to be kind of how we did it, and nothing got done ever, just because we were both kind of a little bitter about what the other person was or wasn't doing, and having to have us both working and realizing the importance of that communication has really grown us closer together. But also, when something doesn't get done, it's not a huge deal, because we know we can, you know, we'll just pick it up the next day.
Yeah, we're kind of learning a little bit more how to tag team, because we are teammates. So I think we're functioning better now, much better now than what we first had Hannah, but better as teammates. So we communicate about where we're at personally too. We're much better about having open lines of communication with each other. So I think partly for me, I had some resentment towards him when we first had Hannah, and he had different resentments towards me too. And it was because we both had these expectations that we weren't communicating, and they were unrealistic. So I was a stay-at-home mom at first, and so his expectation was that I would take care of everything in the home. He could come home, spend time with Hannah. After she went to bed, then we could spend time together. And realistically, my day looked a lot more chaotic than just cleaning the house all day, taking care of the baby, casually putting her to bed, and then spending time with him. So, greeting him with dinner. Yeah. As a person who hates to cook, that was a big struggle for me too. So, I'm learning still how to take care of our home, but also now that I'm back to work, our roles have changed a little bit again. And it seems to be actually working out better now than it did when I was at home all the time. So, but I think what's important is being able to communicate with each other your expectations, coming to an agreement about your roles, so that you know kind of where the other person is needing you to step in and help, and also understanding where you're at. Because if you can function as a team, then there's just much more peace in the home. And sometimes there wasn't peace, and we would be frustrated and we would get upset quickly at each other. But if we can communicate better, and I'm better about asking for help, and he's better at giving me some grace about those things, and just helping each other in the places that we need the help, then we're able to have peace. And so our home is not stressful, and that you don't feel the bitterness and resentment anymore, but you feel calm and peace and love because we're able to establish that between us.
I want to just quickly say something and probably pass it to Lori. First of all, things I remind myself all the time is that, you know, children are supposed to be a blessing. So if you don't feel blessed by them at different times, you got to just pour your heart out to God and say, well, you know, what's going on here? Because this is supposed to be a blessing. And it's often it's here in your heart where you've lost it. And then the second thing, I think, the reason I want to hand it to Lori for question and answer on this one is I've traveled a lot growing up when the kids were growing up. So I was out. And that was a tough thing as a father to sort of feel like you're abandoning your family. There was a stand, I think, for 18 months when it was 6 a.m. flight to Pennsylvania, Monday morning. I was there all week long, flying back on a Friday evening, Saturday at home, Sunday, three services here at church, and then did repeat that for a while. So it's really tough, but God is good. God gave you your kids. He knows what you're capable of. He knows what they need. And he sustained them and our family through these times. So but she's the one that had to deal with all the stress at home a lot of times. So.
Helps that I have a really bad memory, so pretty much a lot of that's just gone, or the sleep I didn't get during that time might have played into it a little bit, but something as a perspective that I've just started to see now is something my mom said to me years ago, and she's been gone for years, that one of those things you remember. I just remember one time she's like, you know, that was a really rough decade. And I'm like, what do you mean a rough decade? I had a bad day, you know. And it was hard to grasp life in the concept of decades. But now looking back and thinking about that, this time when kids are little seems to stretch. Just, oh, my gosh, it goes on forever. A day can seem like a decade, you know, just trying to get through that. But keeping the perspective of this is a time when we are called to raise our children and we need that time together. We need to communicate. But that time together may be both collapsing and falling asleep on the couch after the kids go to bed, and that's togetherness. It may not be, you know, like, hey, we're going out every Friday night. That may not be in the budget. It may not be in the time frame. But the keeping, the communication and having a front where I know Ken would always – I found that we would each defend each other to the kids in protecting each other for that time. Whether, you know, I like to exercise, so Ken would make sure that when he was in town that he would not leave for work maybe till 7 or 7:30 so I could go out a couple mornings a week. Or I would be like, he's had such a rough week, Dad needs that, you know, whatever time he needs to decompress after work. So together, working together to show the kids that you are the united front, you know, defending each other to them, but that's not making sense. Anyway, just, you know, as you're just working together, the kids just need to, and hopefully our kids did. I don't even know. I meant to ask them some more questions before we came tonight. You know, I'm looking at this question saying, I should really ask the kids, you know, what they would do. But I love what you guys all said, just communicate. But in everything you do, just show your kids that you are together in everything, even if it's falling asleep on the couch.
Yeah, God's word is clear that your first priority, if you're married, has to be your spouse. And I know that may be hard, particularly for moms, because your emotions and your heart are going to go towards your kids. There's nothing wrong with that, but your first priority needs to be your spouse. You know, your wives for you men, and your husbands for you ladies. You know, you have to cultivate your relationship first. Otherwise, you're going to have a really hard time being a good parent, because God never intended it to be one person just doing all that, even if one person is with the kids more than the other one. So it is indeed a team effort, which means you have to cultivate your relationship. So, I mean, that just kind of echoes what they've said already. So,
awesome. We're going to jump a little bit on this. I do want to remind the panel just to keep a little bit more brief on the answers so that we can get through a couple more topics. But you guys are doing great. They're doing good?
Yeah.
Awesome. So, we're going to jump to parenting teens. How do you handle a situation of your teen being friends with worldly teens? Are your kids friends?
Well, I mean, we homeschool our kids for the most part. Joel, our oldest, went to middle school full-time and high school full-time. And then our second child, Micah, he's in band at middle school, so they've definitely had interactions. We've always had our kids involved in other activities outside of church, whether it's sports or ballet or something like that. So, I mean, most of their interactions are with believers, but some of them have been with unbelievers. And we did not really face too many challenges there. So I don't know how we would say, how did we handle it? Because we encourage them to be a light is what we encourage them. We challenge them to be bold. We challenge them to share their faith. We challenge them to be a different, to be an example. I think from the earliest of ages, you know, was to shine Jesus. So I think what you have to assess is your problem that they have friends who are not saved, or maybe who aren't walking with the Lord, or maybe are bad influences, and they want to emulate that behavior, or they want to be around that stuff, and it doesn't bother them. Or you have to assess if it's that these are just people that they like. Because if you find yourself in the situation where they want to emulate that behavior, it really isn't, the problem isn't their worldly friends, the problem is in their heart. And a book that really influenced us as parents when we were young was Shepherding a Child's Heart. I would recommend it to every single parent because every issue comes down to that. You know, my goal, I was talking with Ken about this earlier today, my goal, I want to see my kids saved, but it's not my responsibility to get them saved. That's the Lord's responsibility. He's their Savior. It's my job is to try to get to the heart of the issue. And so I need to try to bring them to an awareness of what's going on in their heart. So if you have a child that either wants to be with worldly people because they like the worldly things they do, or they like doing the things that their worldly friends do, then I think you need to address the issue of the heart and start asking some questions like, hey, you know, they're doing some of these things that don't please the Lord. Does that bother you? Like, ask that question. And then based on their answer, you have an idea of what's going on in here, because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And then you need to minister it to whatever that condition of the heart is. So it's not so much an issue with the friends as much as it is your child's heart.
I remember what I was going to say earlier, and it almost relates here too. So no matter what age that you're looking at, I feel like it was really important to kind of choose your battles. If you're looking at a two-year-old, are you really going to battle them throwing Cheerios off a tray, or the lies or what it is? So picking battles so everything's not always no. I know I remember remember hearing someone say, for every no, at least say two yeses to every no. And for teenagers, I think, we have a 13-year-old, so we're kind of there with one. The picking the battles, because maybe she's always been in public school starting kindergarten. So, okay, do we want to have the same jeans and shoes? Is that a battle worth fighting? Not really, if it's something that's doable and possible. Now, if they're not modest or inappropriate, then that would be a different issue. But emulating the world, there's so many different ways to do that. I find her not wanting to stand out in a public school setting and trying to find her way. She comes to church and feels safe, and I'm thankful for that, if church is a safe place. And school is, they're just trying to find their way so much at any age, teenager, wanting to be accepted, wanting to be acknowledged, wanting to know where they fit in. And even if we tell them we don't know where we fit in yet. We still don't know what we want to be. We still don't know how we're going to do that. They don't get that. But I, as you were saying, it's finding where their heart is. Why do they want to go to this event, even if it sounds like maybe not a good idea? Anything from in public school, a dance setting, a party setting, an extra. Why do they want to go? Is that where all the cool kids, is that because the cool kids are going? What do the cool kids do? Why do you want to be? Why do you be one of them? And more than that, how do they act as a light for Christ in that? And I think that's just got to come from constant prayer. So I think the biggest answer I have to that is just pray for your kids. Ask anyone you know to pray for your kids. Get as many prayers going on for those teenagers as you possibly can. Let them know you're praying for them. And something we've tried to do is just pray a specific scripture, whatever that may be, putting their name in that verse and praying that verse with a name for that child over and over. It sounds a little repetitive, but I know the Lord honors that.
I think I I've always told my kids, I pray for you that if you are doing something you shouldn't be doing, that you get caught. Because I want them caught. And I have two so far that have told me that they know their mom's praying that, and it has stopped them so many times because they're like, you know what? I had one child come and tell me one time, I was praying that you were praying that I would get caught. So, you know, I cannot control every little thing they do. If my child is driving and talking on his cell phone, I can do nothing about that, right? So I agree with you that prayer is really the biggest, one of the biggest things, and also just continuing to be open and listen and not freak out every time they say something that scares you. You know, because if you overreact because you're scared, they shut down. Teenagers shut down as soon as you at them. They need to be heard. You know, at least that's what I've experienced.
Obviously, we don't have a teenage child, but I was a teenager. So I can second what Bev has said about that, because I know that I think my sister and brother, as teenagers, communicated a lot more with our parents about stuff that they were going through. I always kept a lot inside. I wasn't very open with my parents about stuff. And while God protected me from a lot of things, and I was pretty obedient kid, there was some things that I could have communicated to my parents that I didn't, because I was worried about how they would react. And it wasn't even necessarily that they were showing me that I had to fear or worry in any sort of way, but I always had this thought that if I opened up about something, that I would be in trouble, and they would be upset with me, and there would be consequences, and I didn't know how to navigate that. So I wasn't very open. So I think one of the ways that I'm hoping that I can be with my girls is to be just willing to listen and to be open with them so that they feel comfortable being open with me. So
you kind of touched on it, Bev and Lori and all of you, you know, with that response as well. But how might parents build trust with their teens at such a vulnerable stage and a challenging stage with different personalities? But how are ways that you guys have built trust with your teen children?
This is funny. This is the one question that I actually asked a child of ours today. I was like, oh, that's a good one. And I was informed to be, what did she tell me? To be in it. Oh, my gosh. She said it so well. She said, just assume I am innocent until proven guilty. You know, she also is taking civics, probably. But it was, you know, in this conversation, you know, that was something that came up, that I appreciate not being having things limited or taken away before I've done them. You know, having the opportunity to prove myself, being assuming that I'm going to make the right choices until I don't. And that was what I was told by a 13-year-old about a good way to build trust.
Amen.
Yeah, I want to just take a second here, hopefully get through this quickly, but this has helped me immensely with teenagers. And I used to be involved with a national organization that worked with teenagers. So I got involved with a couple conferences they did. And they had a great speaker on the teenager, the adolescent brain. And it was about a two-hour talk, so I'll keep it really brief. But it's like, wow, I get it now. But teenagers, when they go through, you know, 11, 12, you start seeing your kids change. And their brains really go into a reconstruction phase through about 22, 25, depending if it's guys and gals. And what happens is the part of the brain that does the thinking and really ponders stuff really starts shutting down as it gets rewritten. And you get back into the more primitive brain, which is usually like, you know, fight or flight response, this reaction response, right? So those times when you look at your kid and say, did you even think about this? The truth is, a teenager, they might not have, right? And it's also the reason that often with your kids, when you approach them sometimes, especially teenagers in the middle of this, you get the what from them, right? And the what is, am I safe, or do you need to fight or flee?
That's right.
Right, that's what they're thinking right then. So the one of the tactics you do is, everything's okay, you're safe, I love you, I want to talk. And that lets that part of their brain get comfortable and lets the thinking part turn back on again, right? And so one of the things we do with our family a lot is you know, you ask your kids to do stuff and they just don't do it, especially when they're teenagers, right? It's like, you didn't do it. And one of the things I try to do often, and we work on this, it's not always easy, is why didn't they do it? Okay, so there's usually two reasons, typically. One is, okay, let's say it's leaving clothes on the floor, right? Okay, so they walked by the clothes and said, Mom told me to pick these up, and I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do it spitefully, just leave them there, and walks away. Okay, that's one issue you got to deal with. That's a discipline problem. The other one is they didn't even think about it, and they walked on past. And often as parents, we sort of think they thought about it and decided not to, right? And then they get that wrath. Like, you know, I told you this, you chose not to do it. Well, guess what? They might not have chose not to do it. They might have just forgotten to do it. Maybe you asked them to do 15 things walking past, and they forgot half of them, right? 14 things, yeah. 14 out of 15. So it's the grace part in that part. You know, don't always just assume that they belligerently decided not to follow your direction. You know, maybe they just didn't think about it. They forgot. And deal with those issues very differently than if you do have a child that you know looked at it and decided not to do it just to spite you. That's a whole different situation. You got to handle that child differently. But that helps build trust if they know that they can. You're open to understanding why things happen as opposed to jumping to judgment.
Something that helps me with the teenagers is really, really, really just sit and think. Take some time and remember how you felt as a teenager. I believed with all of my heart that I was right and that nobody understood. I believed that. It wasn't that I was trying to be rebellious or I was trying to talk back or just be mean or whatever. I believed that. So I have to remember that when I'm dealing with the kids. You know, my daughter's 11 and she's starting to come into some of that. And I just have to remember, okay, you know, I really believed in my heart that my mom just did not love me at that point, you know? It was ridiculous, but I believed it, you know? So a lot of times it's that. It's they believe something. And so you have to remember that, you know? I don't know. That just helps me a lot when I'm dealing with the kids and their things that sometimes they struggle with. And their struggle, just like everybody else.
Trust is an interesting thing. So in our family, everybody knows if you'd really messed up, you go to dad. If it's a small mess up, you go to mom. Because dad freaks out about the small mess ups, but he tends to handle the really bad ones well. As silly as that may sound, though, that's how our kids know it. They're like, if they really mess up, I need to go talk to dad because he'll handle that better than mom. But if it's a small thing, don't tell dad because he'll freak out. But I bring this that I say that to bring up because they trust us that way because that's what we taught them. And so how do you build trust with the teenagers? You build it when they're younger. So you do things, you know, right when they're younger. And as a result, when they're older, you have more trust. Now, if you're out there and you say, Pastor Will, we really messed up with our young kids, does that mean we're lost? No, it just does make it harder, and it means you need to stick to your guns more. It means, you know, in the times where they react negatively to you, you have to reinforce and say, you know, like, well, you just hate me. And you have to say to them, and you have to be patient with them. You can't react to that. You have to say, no, I know you feel that way, but I love you, and we do need to address this, and we need to talk to this. You have to start building trust then. But I think if you have younger children, you build the trust then so that when they become teenagers, they know they're loved, they know how you're going to react generally, and as a result, you know, they know where it's – kids need to know where the boundaries are. They need to know where the lines are. And now, I can't tell you where to put the lines in your family. Our lines are very small around us. But you need to decide as a couple where your boundaries will be, and they need to stick to them. And kids who know where that is, then they trust you. So whether they're younger or whether they're older.
That's good. Yeah, you know, to what Ken had mentioned, there's a special gift I think all teens have that they can overcome the most complex scenarios in the hardest video game in the world, yet they can't figure out how to make their own bed, right? Does that work? All right. I want to jump to education. It's a big topic when it comes to raising our kids, especially in the church. I believe that all of the folks on the panel have probably gone multiple routes. And so how have you approached education with your kids? What's worked and what hasn't?
We've done everything. We've homeschooled. We've public schooled. We've charter schooled. We have not private Christian schooled. So not everything. We left that one out. But we pray every year for each kid. God, what do you want to do with this kid? So Joel was homeschooled until middle school. We threw him into sixth grade. I remember feeling like I threw him to the sharks. I cried and cried and cried watching him walk away with his little backpack. But, you know, he was the kind of kid, though, that could handle that. He would come home and he'd say, Mom, you know, all these kids are just talking badly about their parents. And I just tell them, I love my parents. I don't understand. You know, but that's Joel. You know, I'm mentioning names. I'm sorry, Joel. You know, we had another one who just is, his brain functions at a level that I don't even understand. And so I could not homeschool him at that young age. And plus, he didn't believe me because I was not a teacher and I did not understand as a teacher would understand. So clearly, I did not know what I was talking about. So we sent him to school. But we ended up pulling him out for that same reason, that he believed the teacher over his mother. That reason, and also for some social reasons. We have a daughter who we put in kindergarten at the charter school who came home believing that she was stupid because all the other kids were getting better grades on their reading tests, and I thought, this is not, no kindergartner should feel stupid, so we brought her home. Ethan never has gone to school, ever, except at church. But part of the reason we ended up keeping them all home was because we really felt like for our lifestyle, it worked out better for our family because we would have more flexibility. It wasn't necessarily an educational reason. It was more personal. We believe that their character is as important as their education. And so we want to have the most influence that we could in their life. And with the school schedules and the driving back and forth, it just was not making that possible for us. So we did have a lot of discussions because William is very, everything has to be regimented. And I'm like, we just do whatever. And no, it'll all work out, you know. And these kids need a schedule and they have to get the and I just am not. So we've had a lot of discussions. Right, Will? That's how you are. I'm kidding, but I am. Whee! But, you know, really I think, okay, all of that to say, we pray for each kid every single year. And if the Lord tells us to put them in school, I will probably fight for a little while. But, you know, we do that. That's how we approach school.
And just to quick sum up, basically was what she's saying was that we felt that's what was best for our kids. We never said that was best for your kids. We felt like that's what our kids needed, and I think that's what you need to figure out for your kids.
I think we're basically going to ditto that because our kids all had a different path. As a matter of fact, just recently the oldest was like, I can't even talk about school with my siblings because they all did something different. You know, one did public school the entire way through. One did half and half, and the other did, you know, homeschool the whole way through. So they don't have that in common, which was just, I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know, that's not a discussion they can have about their schooling years. But it was the same thing, this praying every year. At first it was, there was a, and there is still, and I love the homeschool mindset. It doesn't, but also not feeling guilty if it's not what the Lord has given you at that particular time for that particular kid for your family. You know, everyone's dealing with something different. For us, my parents were older. I was dealing with their health issues, and I just couldn't manage everything. So public school was a choice at that time, and that was okay too. But for a little while, sometimes you feel like everybody's looking at you. You know, like, oh, public school kids, and they're watching them even more carefully, you know, and, you know, are they acting differently? And, you know, so it's been interesting, and I feel like there's quite a variety of schooling options that everyone has chosen from that private Christian to charter, and I love that everyone's got the different experiences here. And when you guys came, we didn't feel so bad, like, oh, we're the only ones doing public school. But I'm just dittoing because it's just that prayer for each kid. And each kid also, each kid does not have to go the same path because they're all going to be so different and different gifts.
Yeah, let me say something, too. It's very interesting that our two oldest kids started out as homeschool kids. So I just challenge you to be open to what God calls you to, because someone said she would never homeschool for the longest time, and we just couldn't imagine ever homeschooling our kids. And I had some bad examples in my life of some homeschool families that were not like Bev out there, but like way, way out there. You know, like, you know, we'll get the math when we cover like doing money. So when they're like, you know, 5 years from now, I'm like, hold on a second here. So, like Will, I was a little more concerned about that, and we found a nice little program that had some structure to it, came in a box, and it gave me the peace to know that we would, that someone had thought through this as we take our kids and educate them at home. But do pray about that, because like I said, we were the most unlikely homeschool family that I would have ever told you about. But when it came time, that's where God led us, and it worked out great for our kids.
For the parents that have to make this decision.
Honestly,
in a couple years.
Obviously we don't have our girls in school yet because they're too young. But I was a teacher in a public school setting for 3 years, and right now I'm teaching a preschool class in a Christian private school, and so I'm getting experience from the teaching side of things, and I was homeschooled through up until high school, basically. And so actually he was homeschooled all the way through high school. So we both like really appreciated our homeschool experience. And I know that my heart's desire is to homeschool, but I've also found a home in the private school I'm in. So when it comes to schooling, we've both talked about the possibilities of homeschooling. We've talked about the possibilities of putting our girls in the private school that I'm in if the Lord, you know, wills for me to stay there. And I think if the Lord wanted us to put our girls in a public school, we would consider it. I think I'm hesitant towards it only because I've seen it from the teacher's standpoint of a public school. And I know the struggle a teacher has of really ministering to every single student. And I also understand that the curriculum that you're given is not Christian. And I know our heart's desire is to raise our girls to obviously follow Jesus. But I want to be able to talk to them and have those conversations about the difference between what the world says and what the Bible says. So I think as long as you're prepared to handle those conversations, I think your child can be successful in a public school, and your child can be successful in homeschool, and your child can be successful in a private school or a charter school, whatever it is. I think what's important is that you are on the same page with your spouse about what your child is going to be doing, but also be prepared for the types of conversations, because not every child that even goes to a private school is going to be Christian. I didn't realize that when I was in my private school as a teenager. I kind of just assumed everyone here believes in God. And so I started spending time with them and realized I was the only believer really in that group of people. So just understanding that it may not matter which avenue you take. What's important is that you're still the parent through all of those situations, and you're still able to guide your children in all of those situations as long as you're intentional with it.
Hopefully some relief came off the shoulders of some parents struggling with that. You know, I know you brought it up, Ken, you know, just shame is something that can get us a lot of times when we're parenting. So hopefully we don't feel shame and pray through that. I thought of an example recently. Some brothers and I were talking about this. Oftentimes we think of God's will and like eight ball choices, you know, and like a book. They used to have them where they had two endings, and you chose the endings, and one ended in a bad way, one you didn't want, and another ended in a way that you might want. And ultimately, you know, sometimes we think of God's will that way, that, oh no, if I choose that wrong ending, you know, is it going to destroy all the fruit from potential from my life? And so God's will is a way, it's a path, it's our walk of prayer through it. So it's not about me, but I just wanted to reinforce that because I think that's very important in talking about education. So speaking of hard topics to talk about with our kids, how have you guys dealt with talking about those hard topics in the world, you know, that they approach those questions and have those hard questions, whether it be about homosexuality, whether you're dealing with, things like magic and movies and, you know, the things that obviously the world doesn't see as an issue, but we as Christians do. Whoa.
You tell them Harry Potter's of the devil right away when they hit one, as soon as they can hear. No, I'm kidding.
Oh. I was submitting joyfully.
Sorry, go ahead.
Honestly, did you finish your question?
Yes, go ahead.
There is no subject that I will not talk to my kids about, even when they're tiny. We had an issue in an airport not too long ago, and there was a huge man with an extremely deep voice, beard, everything, but he was dressed as a woman. And he came to the women's bathroom. And I was with Ethan and Ari, and they were tiny, they were small, and they just looking at the guy and looking at me, and I'm smiling, and I'm like, just wash your hands. And we addressed the man and said hello and kept walking. And we get out, and I'm trying to, like, walk out because I knew the question was going to come. And so, you know, and I'm like, well, yes, that was a man, and he is dressed like a woman. Well, why was he in the woman's bathroom? Well, in our country, you know, I explained some things, and they just, why? And I said, well, you know, some people are very confused, and right now we just need to pray. We prayed for the man. It was a longer conversation than that, but basically I told them the truth about the situation. I don't want there to be any taboo subjects, because I really believe that that creates a lot of issues when the kids are older and they actually are confronted face to face with an issue such as sex, drugs, transgender issues, or even their own, if they're struggling with their own sexual identity, which I hate to say it, but this is, I asked some young adults the other day, what is the biggest issue facing you guys right now? And they said that gender identity is the biggest issue that they're facing as young adults right now. So this is something that the kids are going to face. So I try to prepare them as best I can. You know, when we explain the birds and the bees, I use plain language. From the time they're small, I use plain language, even though I hate certain words. I try to use plain language, and I think that so far with the older ones, they have no fear coming to talk to me or will about these things. And I really believe with all my heart that that needs to be, we need to be able to be influencing them in these areas of with truth. And we cannot do that if we're scared to talk about it, or if we are scared, we need to not let them know. At least that's the way, or tell them, you know, this, I don't like this either. It makes me uncomfortable. Just honesty, I think. Maybe that's it.
No, I think, obviously, again, not having teenagers, but being one like 3 years ago. what Bev said is so, so important. I was blessed to be raised even just by my mom, but in a way where everything and anything was open to discussion. And I'm so extremely grateful for that and hope to pass that on to our girls as they grow up, just that transparency to be able to just have that open conversation. And while maybe she didn't necessarily always take it back to biblical principles, that is my desire, because do I want the world to make the decision for them, or do I want the Word of God to make the decision for them? And so I just want a second and as an encouragement and just how important and vital what Bev said is.
Yeah, I think it's what Eric's saying too is, you know, you want to be open and that kind of in everything too, but part of us as Christians too, we have to prepare for those topics as well, whenever you possibly can. So you can think about, you know, how do you handle this and how do you want to deal with this? So when a question comes up, it doesn't surprise you. And if you haven't prepared, which they can always come up with both ones, you know, you might just need to say, well, that's a great question. Let me come back to you in a little while about it too. So you go back and consult the Bible and talk to some other people and say, okay, how should we handle the situation? I think with the gender identity thing and transgenders and things like that nowadays, one of the things I caution people on is, you know, especially of us that are older, there is ways we handle people like that and phrases and words that just are not appropriate as Christians. And we got to make sure we don't instill that fear into our children. You know, these are people, like Bev said, you should be praying for them. And God loves them still. You know, especially as kids, if they're little, just be careful the attitude you bring to that situation. and how you address it, so it's not something that's wrong and they're somehow evil and, you know, irredeemable somehow. Because the kids will take that in, and then they'll come back out of their mouths, especially when they're younger, right? And they will say your attitude in plain English sometimes, and you're like, where did that come from? You're like, oh, wow, that came from me. Okay, good. That's what I think. You just gotta think through situations and how you'd handle it as a Christian and explain it as clearly as you can with the kids.
I grew up in an occult background, so, like, magic was a big no-no. So, like, we learned really early on that we had to be careful about how we handled certain topics, because at a pastor's conference, one of our children, I was in a classroom with another child that had a Pokemon shirt on, and they persecuted the Pokemon kid. So because we had spoken very negatively about that and that we would not do that in our home. Now, again, if your kid's Pokemon, I'm not telling you you're the devil. That's not my point. But because of the background I had, we didn't have any involvement with that kind of stuff with our kids. I just never wanted it in the home. So we realized early on that we had probably gone a little too heavy on that. And what we needed, so we revised in the way we handled it, where we would say, well, we don't do that. But, you know, if your cousins or your friends do that, it doesn't automatically make them evil. And that's an interesting conversation, because then they're just like, what? Is it right or is it wrong? And we would explain to them that, well, we believe it's not what's best for our family, and so that's just why we don't do that. And so, you know, will you trust us that that's the case? We would say others can, but we can't. And, you know, that is a lesson that it's not just our kids need to learn. That's a lesson every Christian needs to learn. Because there'll be things that others can do and will not have be tempted at all, and you just can't. And you have to learn that yourself. So I think the earlier your kids learn that in their own lives, that that's a principle, then they can come to grips with the fact that, well, I'm a 17-year-old, you know, young man, and maybe they can all go to the school football games, but the only thing I'm looking at is those cheerleaders, and I can't. And so, you know, the sooner they learn, you know, what their limits are and their own struggles are, you know, or what their own personal convictions need to be, I think the stronger they'll be as a believer. So it was a good thing for us to learn how to navigate that and then to teach our kids that truth. So
I think that something I would have liked to have gotten across better, and maybe wasn't at the time, didn't think about it with the kids, is anything from dealing with, you know, identity, gender identity, to you know, when there's someone, you know, passed out drunk by the side of the road, you know, that you're talking about, is to go in the Bible when it has a list of sin. They're all equal, you know, and including the did I tell a lie? Did I gossip? And then just helping the kids to understand that all sin is equal. They are absolutely no different than we are. We are forgiven. But each day, you know, I find myself, you know, wanting to that urge to be envious or to, you know, just want to say something about someone maybe I shouldn't say. Those are it's no different than what we're seeing out there, and just helping kids to understand that we are all equal before God. We've chosen to ask His forgiveness and we are saved, but otherwise we would be them. And somehow I don't know the best way to get that across, but the Lord will give you the grace to do that. And also, I just want you guys to know I'm an absolute wimp on this whole subject. I find books, I find video series, anything that I can do to not have to talk about it is great. And there's amazing resources out there, you know, to help kids, you know, whether, you know, it's dancing vegetables, you know, whatever it is that your kids enjoy watching. There's some great resources out there too. So, you know, but as you start talking to friends or other people and ask around, we found that for each, you know, for each kid, they've enjoyed listening to different things. And that's been a really great resource, too. And I find that as they get to teenagers and they tune your voice out, they do not hear a word you say in, out, that's it. But if they're listening to an audio program or something that's really making them think, they're going to hear that a whole lot better than they're going to hear me.
And to tag on to that real quick, if you ever get opportunities with our, you know, our high school retreats, junior high things like anytime we have student conferences, stuff like that, you got to get your kids there if you have them, if they can participate, because they will, I know for me as a teenager, I got saved the same time as my parents did. So it's not so much even just, I was not only just a teenager, but they were not further along spiritually than I was, you know, or at least in my mind, I didn't think they were. So I listened to my my teachers, you know, at church a lot more than I would to them, even if they teachers said the same thing. So I think, you know, the more voices you get for your kids, I think the more influence you can have on them.
Yeah, I was actually going to reinforce that as well. You know, being a teacher of the youth myself, the junior high school, and being a part of Calvary Chapel, you know, I think it's great how, you know, we do. That's part of our nature. We go through the Bible verse by verse, chapter by chapter. There's nothing that we don't cover, and we treat the same teaching with the junior highs and high school as you do. You have with Pastor Will teaching us in here. And so we're praying about how to address those same topics, but they're coming up. We're not dodging those because they're hard topics to talk about, because God's word does talk about them. So we're probably on our last question. This is a tough one to figure out which one we should ask. So, you know, with technology being such a powerful and a strong influence in our children's lives today, how have you dealt with technology in your home, whether it be overuse or abuse by your kids, or maybe even with yourselves as parents? Because I know that we have a hard time disconnecting sometimes, and we use devices as a way to cope with our own being spent. And our kids see that as well. So both, how have you dealt with it with the kids, and how have you dealt with it with yourselves as well?
This is probably the most common conversation that we have. I'm pretty sure my two-year-old knows more about iPhones and iPads and things than I do. And she's, well, even if we're watching something on TV, she will stream it from her TV or her iPad or whatever device onto our TV, whatever she was watching, so she can watch it on the big TV instead. It took me a week to figure that out. So it's a very common discussion, and I don't know, honestly, if we've necessarily come. I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say, because I don't know if we've exactly come to an agreement on what we should
they
do.
They let their daughter use an iPad?
Heathens.
Let me segue that into, I do see how it can be beneficial if policed properly.
I'll add to that just a little bit, that she does use devices, but there's a way, like with iPhones, that you can customize all of the settings. So when she's using it, I'm very careful about what she can use, because I don't want her to accidentally find something that's inappropriate or something like that at 2 years old, because it's very accessible. So she has only a couple of things that she's allowed to do. One of them is tracing letters, numbers, shapes, colors, things like that, so it's educational. And then she also has shows that she can watch, and we save it to kids' settings. So we're careful about what she's able to access. So our struggle comes to how often she's asking for it. So some days I'll let her watch a show for maybe an hour or something like that. Some days I've reached my limit, and especially when I had Addie and we were in the newborn days, we had a lot of TV time. And there were days I felt really guilty about it, and there were days where I was like, this is just where I'm at, and I can't handle anything right now. I'm exhausted, and I need to focus on feeding these children and keeping them alive. So when I was in survival mode, I did not feel any shame or guilt about our technology use. So right now we're at the stage, though, where we're trying to get better about having guidelines and, you know, setting time frames, when she can do it, when she can't do it, and balancing, because we're trying to make sure she is spending time outside, making sure she's playing with Play-Doh or coloring or things like that, things that are her age-appropriate activities, while also allowing her sometimes to watch a show or play a game or something on a device. So that's where we're at right now.
We just have a few rules. It's been a struggle. You know, we have older ones and younger ones in the house. And so, of course, you know, Ethan's, one of his favorite things to do is to play games with Joel. Joel's playing games that probably a 9-year-old shouldn't play, things we didn't allow him to do till he turned 20 years old, you know. So not that anything horrible is occurring in our house, but, you know, there are definitely things that we wouldn't allow. But, you know, it's like time with his brother. So there are things like that. But, you know, we don't allow devices in bedrooms. Their computer screens are out where we can see them. If I walk into the room, I need to see your screen. I don't want any laptops turned to where it's facing a wall. And when I walk in, you click real quick because kids are super smart. And they just exit out and they don't realize I can go back and see everything you have ever done on your computer, child. So, you know, when they learn that, then they learn they can clear their history. So kids are, if I can encourage you with anything, is I don't care how young your kids are. Like you just said, they figure it out before you figure it out. And they know. And even just simple things like we don't allow YouTube anymore because you know you can go on a rabbit trail and end up in some really inappropriate places. You start out watching Barney or whatever. Does anyone watch Barney anymore? you start watching something and then pretty soon it's, oh, what's that? What's that? What's that? What's that? And you know because you do the same thing. So if you're doing it, your kids are doing it, and they don't have the ability within themselves to stop. Because you don't either, okay? So there are a lot of things that we try to do to safeguard. You cannot protect them from everything, which is why you have to be very vigilant. We're pretty serious about it. You know, with a 20-year-old, he pays for his own phone. So I can't control what he does. But all of my kids know I'm going to walk up to you at any moment, and I will grab it, and I will see what you're doing because I am paying for that thing. You know, we didn't give a phone to them. Well, Joel was 16, 17 when he got a phone. He had an iPod when he was 14, but it was the same deal. This is mine, and as long as it is mine, I have access to it at any moment. You know, so I know that might sound a little militant, but it is so dangerous out there. And we teach them the internet is not a safe place. It is like me taking you to the mall and sending you out and saying, fend for yourself, 9-year-old. And I said that to him once, and his eyes went really big. And I said, that's how the internet is even worse than that. I'm like, it is not safe. I know it seems safe, but it's not safe. So anyway, there you go.
Yeah, if we invited, you know, the police to come and share with us, you know, what goes on the internet, you would never let your kids go on the internet with the amount of predators that are out there. And we've been very frank with our kids about that. You know, we don't allow them to go on public Minecraft servers. They're not allowed. If they want to play on a private one with their friends, that's fine. They're not allowed to go on public servers. You know, they're just not allowed to do that because it's there. You are literally turning your kid loose in the middle of Disney World when you do that with no supervision. So, because all it takes is some pervert to send them a message and you don't know where it goes from there. So, you know, I would strongly urge you, you know, you should not let them keep devices. I had a lady ask me the other day. She goes, my daughter's 16, you know, and she needs her privacy. And I said, nobody needs her privacy. You know, that's where in the darkness is where sin happens. And so, you know, all our kids know you don't take your devices. None of them are allowed to take their devices or into their bedroom. You know, they're not allowed to overnight, you know, and they're not by themselves. And I realize that you may have different situations with your kids, but be careful with that about being naive. Because the reality is you may think they can't be tempted by something or they may not stumble onto something. But the enemy is out there trying to nab your kids. So, and I'm not saying that to scare you. Well, actually, I am. Yeah, I am saying that to scare you. Because, you know, we need to have a healthy fear of that and realize that God gives us principles for a reason, that we're to flee sexual sin, we're to flee youthful lusts, because that's where danger happens. And we have, there have been times when we have taken things away from our kids. We have said, you're not going to play that game anymore. Whether it was an attitude that we saw, you know, or, you know, we, for example, we limit. Our kids are only allowed to use electronics from 3:30 to, was it 3 o'clock to 7 p.m.? 3 to 7:30. That's the only time frame they're allowed to use them, because we want them doing other things, like you guys said, with their time. So we've always had some type of limitation on it, because we just felt like that's what was healthy for our kids. And you have to figure what that is for you as well.
So first of all, I think the first question was overuse. So first, coming from someone who first thing to do is check their email, and the last thing they do is check their email, is there overuse? I don't understand that. Hold on, I think I have somebody call me. No. So we have a bit of a different perspective, I think, at times, but yes, some similarities too. So I'm involved with a lot of cyber stuff, and it is a very dangerous world out there. And I think you go back to the idea of the funnel, and we have a lot tighter controls on our kids when they're younger. But as they head into their teenage years, we've given them a little more freedom because you know, my son is out on his own now. And at some point, they have to learn self-control and how to take care of this stuff on their own, too. And I've seen, I mean, every kid is different. You have to understand that, too. You have to understand your child. But I've seen kids that you start fighting this battle of locking down and securing things, and they're going to purposely try to get around it and do bad stuff just because you're pushing them that far, right? So there's some kids you got to handle with very strictly, and other ones you can get a little more freedom to and say, look, I'm going to treat you as an adult, and as long as you behave like an adult, we're going to treat you like an adult. If at any point we find a reason not to trust you, we're going to take your phone away and you may never see it ever again, right? But, you know, you have to learn, you have to give them the freedom to learn how to behave as an adult and handle temptation out there, because it is a very dangerous place. So one thing that Lori and I were talking about, we were preparing for this question a little bit. Social media is one of the areas, and social networks is an area that we have been very strict on, and we haven't let the kids get into those very until they're older. Even, you know, our teenager doesn't have social media accounts at all. You know, there's very little good that can happen there in those areas. I think the same thing you're talking about with the Minecraft servers and stuff like that. So, you know, so the internet is a dangerous place, but the social areas get even more dangerous. So I think, you know, making sure your child is, your teenager, hopefully, is mature enough to handle what's going to happen, what they're going to see, and how they're going to be treated by others out there. And the things are, you know, they have to be mature enough to handle that before they start getting access to that. Because, you know, it can be devastating, and online bullying is a real thing. So if you let them have access to that too early, it can be really hard for them.
Maybe one thing is just make that it's part of education now. Sitting down with your kids as they're doing research, as they have papers to write. You know, I remember when my daughter was first writing papers, I would sit there and I would help her choose every website, and we would say, okay, these are the, you know, six sites you can use to write your paper from. And I would like print them out so she couldn't go clicking around and try to find more. But then it's learning, okay, so I would say, well, does that look like a site maybe you shouldn't click on? You know, it's actually, I felt like there was a little bit of training there in going on and sitting there in showing them how to choose what, you know, a site you might know. Well, sure, Wikipedia may not be true, but it's generally, you know, fairly safe. So, you know, what sites do you know you can go back to over and over when you're doing a research paper, when you're doing school? Helping them see maybe this name doesn't make sense of a site. So let's not go clicking there. And if you something you think you need, come get me and we'll do it, or I'll look at it first. So it's going to take a little extra time than it did going a generation back, going 10 years ago back. I don't think my daughter has a single physical textbook in eighth grade. I've not seen a book yet this year. So everything is online. And it's a whole different, if it's a whole different ballgame. We didn't grow up with it, so it's a little harder to figure out how to navigate, I can't, you know, I walk near a device and it starts flickering and turns off. So I just, you know, don't have that kind of relationship. Thankfully, I have people in my family that can make them work again. But it's just plan to spend that time and don't think of it as a waste of time. You know, I know when I first sat down, I'm like, I can't believe I'm sitting here, you know, reading Wikipedia, reading through different websites to find the safe ones. But it's an investment. It's not a waste of time.
I just want to throw in one quick thought, too. One of the things I've always told the kids, too, and I tell any teenager, too, remember that everything you put down on the internet, web, email, is probably there forever. And like Bev was saying, everyone can find out what you've done. Okay, so I put a little bit of the fear of God into them on that one stuff. So we can figure out what you've done, what you've said, and it can come back and haunt you later in your life, too. So, you know, don't ever say anything on the internet to an email or chat that you would not say to that person in person. And just keep reminding them that this stuff has longevity. It's not like, you know, just talking to your friend. It's there forever, and it can come back and get you later, too.
Yeah, think of people who've lost scholarships, jobs, and everything because of internet shaming, because of something stupid they said when they were a teenager.
If I could piggyback a little bit on the education side of it, too. First, I want to say, don't assume that because you have daughters that they won't fall into similar temptations or even the same exact temptations as sons. I know that, like, I didn't really have any training on how to use the internet and things like that. I kind of just, my parents gave me a laptop and, well, that was as a teenager. I even used a computer when we were younger, but I found myself in a lot of compromising situations because I was curious and I didn't really know how to navigate safely through the internet. And I was also with like I said, people who I thought were believers at the school, and turns out they weren't believers. I was the believer in the group. So I was being influenced by people around me that had the appearance of being safe friends and safe situations on the computer even, but I made some wrong choices in how I used the internet and how I communicated with people in that way. So I think training your children how to use the internet safely is extremely important, and then also being vigilant in monitoring how they're using it. I think sometimes we assume that because girls can sometimes be wise, or at least have the appearance of making smart choices, maybe they have a little bit more freedom sometime, but the truth is they can be in exactly the same situation. So try to err on the side of caution in all of those things. It's not just predators on the internet, but even girls can look up things on the internet the same way that a boy looks up something on the internet. So.
You know, that it's not a right. It's you own it, you know, and I think that as parents, we have to remember that, you know, we do own that device. Don't be ashamed as a parent to just take that thing right back. And then the privilege side of it, as was pointed out as well. So all awesome stuff. Can we give a hand for our panel? Thank you all for, being on the fire line and doing this, and I hope everybody was blessed. Can we also give a hand to the hospitality folks that did such a great job? Hopefully I didn't steal their reward, because they always work in the background, but they're awesome. So I did want to leave you guys, because we do have to go back to real life and be parents, most of us. And so I want to leave you guys with a few resources if you have notes, if you want to take them, that are on the practical side. So some books would be Shepherding a Child's Heart by Ted Tripp, Age of Opportunity by Paul Tripp. This is a cool one. Kid Gloves by Sandy Adams. It's very small, which is great. It doesn't feel like you can actually do this, you know. You don't have to sit down and read a novel. And it just has some really great, succinct wisdom for parenting. So it's a great one. It's $6 on Kindle. For technology, there's a couple of resources that you guys can use. Covenant Eyes is for accountability. For biblical sexuality discussions, any of the book series by Luke and Tricia Gilkerson is the God's Design for Sex book series as well. Going back to the technology, you know, worldly influences, commonsensemedia.org and pluggedin.com both have great reviews for movies and things in culture. And then again, parental control software, some other resources are NetNanny and Circle, which is done by Disney. So those are some things that you guys might find interesting that can, you know, help you in that. So I'm going to turn it over to Pastor Will.
And I can speak that we use in our family.
Check, check. There we go. We used one of those software for our family for a while, just to keep everybody safe. So they can be very useful. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and close with some prayer, and then go rescue the teachers. Lord, we thank you for this evening, and we recognize, Lord, that we all need your help in this parenting thing. And so I pray for all the parents out there and for us up here that you would give us wisdom and insight to know how to parent our kids, Lord, because you give us clear principles about certain things. But, Lord, our own kids are unique in how we figure out how those principles apply to them. So help us with that, we pray, and bless us all, we ask in Jesus' name. And all God's people said, amen. Amen. God bless you. Thanks for coming.